Welcome back to Rain on Your Parade with J.O. Covan. I'm J.O. Covan, here as always with Producer Mike. Hello, Producer Mike.
Hi, everybody. Hi, JL. How you doing? What's going on? Good to see you.
It's good. Just a big reveal for the crowd. I actually wasn't here last week. That's the magic of podcasting.
Yeah.
And I want to thank...
Yes, that's true.
I want to thank everybody who responded to the movie podcast the same way you responded to the NFL podcast. So apparently my fan base is the group of Americans who like neither football nor movies.
I told you I disagree with this take. I do think that we had some strong support in the comments from the Rain on Your Parade community. Raindrops, we'll call them, from the raindrops. That they were into the movie stuff.
Let me tell you something about takes.
Yeah.
If you will not give, I'll take.
Fine. He will not give, I will take.
Oh, Joey Zaza, R.I.P.
Zaza!
Man, Godfather 3, no bad movie gets talked about more in this room.
Yeah.
But yes, I think what I was just saying, and then we'll move on, is that I'm disappointed that we get on hot topics or topics that hit my algorithm better, usually sort of politics, current events, things like that. We do get a major boost, but the disappointing thing is, like, you'd hope, hey, if you like that, why don't you stick around? Why don't you be a regular listener rather than letting the algorithm decide when and where you hear and see my stuff?
Yeah.
It's not that the core base is not following us. It's just we want to move beyond the base. Unlike Trump, we want to move beyond our base.
Yeah, we're trying to do more. So,
but as everybody can see, the streak continues. People said I couldn't do it, that I was too fat. I didn't have enough clothing to fit, but I got my Harris Walls t-shirt in the mail. So
yeah, he's really trying, folks.
September, Mike. September, we're basically is a wrap on shirts. So now I'm going to have to find a new winter rotation.
You're out of shirts?
Out of shirts that don't make me look like 10 pounds of shit in a 5-pound bag.
Oh, my God.
Well, thought I would lose weight, but this year has been very trying on my mental and physical health, so it didn't happen the way I thought it would. And I don't know if it will. And I think I have an injury in my right shoulder, which I've told everybody, and this is a warning to the community. After what I went through with my left shoulder, which is not my dominant arm, and how that basically took a year of my life from me, I said, if my right shoulder requires surgery, I'm just going to ask the surgeon to euthanize me.
No, get out of here.
Propofol. Get the Propofol. So I hope it's not the case. I hope it's just inflammation and maybe a strain or something like that. But I know it's always the worst case scenario with me. So let's move past that, folks. Guys, let's talk about the only thing you'd like less than the NFL and movies. Shows that I'm going to be doing this Saturday in New Jersey. Once again, last chance. Okay. You'd see Springsteen. You'd see Bon Jovi. Well, there's a third New Jersey icon that you can see for a lot cheaper than those two. And it's me at the Williams Center in Rutherford, New Jersey. 7 p.m. Doors open. Show starts at 7:45. It will be a great show. It's me as Trump. It's our Making Podcast Great Again live show. I'm telling you, if you like my impressions, if you like the Trump stuff, you'll really enjoy this show. So get tickets on my website or at thewilliamscenter.org. After that, weird announcement here because I have other shows. Just go to my calendar for all the other shows I have. Chicago, big shows coming up in Chicago, Pittsburgh, New York City, Emporia, Virginia, Hartford, Connecticut, Princeton, New Jersey. Those are all on my website with links. But October 4th, 5th, and 6th, I am starring in an off-Broadway. It just sounds funny, like me saying this.
Yeah.
I am starring in an off-Broadway
show. It's called Having
show.
A Career, Jay. Look at this.
Sort of. an off-Broadway show called Dictator for a Day. I play Trump, and there's two of us playing Trump. One guy is doing songs as Trump. I'm doing the monologues. It's a very funny show, and I can vouch for it because I've basically written 90% of my part or adjusted the Trump parts to fit my Liam Neeson-esque unique set of skills, particular set of skills. That link is on my website as well, but it's October 4th, 5th, and 6th. We'd obviously like to fill the crowd because really what this is about is filming the shows, to either put them on a streaming platform or market the show as a live sort of off-Broadway show. So the more people that are there, the better. Ticket links are on my website for that. It's called Dictator for a Day, or you can go to dictatorforadayshow.com for all the info and tickets. But it's been a lot of work this month. That's why I'm even keeping my glasses on today, Mike, because the bags under my eyes,
I know, I'm with you,
are real. I am done right now, and I still have 2 weeks to muscle through this. So, but then the Ranger season starts.
I know. We're
all excited. And you know what that means? All my money from the off-Broadway show, Chris Kreider, goal, plus 130. But I'm looking forward to the Rangers season. Yeah, that's it. So you know the deal. I give you this all the time. My special, Half Blackface, last week, the album of Half Blackface. If you haven't listened to it or bought it, please do so, because now I own 100% of it. So the link that is available on all streaming and music platforms, 100% goes to me instead of dividing it. I own it now. So, you know, people are always asking me, how can I support, or I love your work or whatever. If you're not near any shows I do, I always love people coming to shows. That's the most important thing. But, you know, stream my albums, buy my albums, watch the special, recommend it to a friend, et cetera. So whatever you can do, I appreciate it. But I guess Dictator for a Day, in addition to my other shows, is kind of a big deal. If you're interested in that, I think you will. If you like my Trump stuff, you can go to all these Trump shows, because they'll all be different and you will laugh your ass off at them. So that's it. There's the housekeeping. Couple intro topics, Mike, that I feel like you're a good guy to have on this one. Mm. First off, I watched Taylor Swift's Eras Tour movie on Disney Plus. Taylor's version.
Yep.
By the way, that's Taylor's version, mm-hmm, with an extra half hour.
Oh, so there are actually two of them.
Yeah, it's the Snyder Cut. It's an extra half hour that I realized after watching about 10 minutes of the extra half hour post credits that I was like, yeah, I thought she was going to join like forces with Sabrina Carpenter and Olivia Rodrigo and, mm-hmm, Adele, and they'd form the Divas,
yes,
and fight crime, but yeah, apparently not. That part just felt indulgent. But I got to say, first off, incredible movie. I only caught one editing error, but it was pretty egregious. A woman's face, just a backup singer's face, just disappeared. But they didn't skip a beat in the song. I was like, how tightly edited is that? That there was like,
you're judging editing errors now.
Well, no, I'm saying if not for, because it was like jarring. I was like, what happened there? If the woman's face had not disappeared, you couldn't have told that there was any skip or anything.
Yeah.
But anyway, very big concert, incredibly impressive. I think I get what you're talking about Jack Antonoff. I don't know the cutoff when Antonoff got involved, but there is, like, she had,
I think it's Reputation.
Well, I don't know which, is that like her last two albums are Antonoff, or was it before?
No,
then?
I mean, he's done like the last like four or something.
Oh,
he's done it. I think it's either 1989 or Reputation that he got involved. And
well, not
ruined.
1989 is a long time ago. That I feel like that would have
so
been.
So is Reputation.
Oh,
they're both a long time ago. Reputation.
Would you be able to look that
up?
Yeah,
let me take a look.
Because what I noticed is her last couple albums are the ones when, based on like how she was defining her eras, I was like, these are, it feels almost like the Taylor Swift has been lost in them, that these could be anybody.
Yeah.
Sort of.
So 2017 is Reputation. Antonoff is listed as a producer.
1989
there
was before that. Because she redid 89 just to get the ownership of it.
And he's a producer on 1989 as well.
But I think the new 1989 where she re-recorded it or something.
No, 2014. He is he's credited as a producer.
That's so long. It feels so long.
I don't know if he produced the whole album, because there's a bunch of producers on here.
Right.
Like Ryan Tedder and a bunch of guys.
Okay. But, so that's when he and Fun was like 2012. I didn't realize that's how long ago it is now. Jeez.
Because he's not. So yeah, Red is her last like country-esque sort of album.
Okay.
And there's no Antonoff. It's like Butch Walker. It's Jack Knifley. It's all like country people.
Okay.
And then 1989 and 2014 is when Antonoff gets in the mix and ruins our girl's music.
There were some there. I feel like it was her later stuff where he's now been like the guy behind her, maybe not a co-producer, a part.
Like a co-collaborator, basically.
Yes.
Yeah.
Those ones I didn't really care for.
But he came. So 2014 is when they start working together.
OK,
so
the Grima worm tongue to her. Yes. King of Rohan.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. That. So Shake It Off. That is the album that she was like, I'm not a country singer anymore.
What if you do pop music, Taylor? We'll make the melodies unrecognizable.
I don't do country music anymore, Gandalf. You shall sing acoustic.
So what I noticed, though, is like some of the pop songs that I felt were like they may be like 2017 range, and Shake It Off, I guess, is
2014.
Oh, even earlier.
Yeah.
But I feel like those still had.
Yeah, like Ready For It, that song. That's
what's Ready For It.
Are you ready for it? 2017. Yeah, well, that's
what about
with
the song that goes dun 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 dun.
That's recent.
I kind of like that one. Fuck, I was hoping that would be like a little earlier. That was the
Starbucks lovers.
That was the only like very pop song, and maybe because it was also presented really well at the concert, but it was a very upbeat. I hated the sort of like, ooh, I'm very like digital and like this is really dark and like my vocals don't matter here. Really, the lyrics don't matter that much. I felt like in these last couple ones, and I gotta say, we defended Taylor Swift from the haters last football season.
Yeah.
For good reason, I think. But I will say, 4 albums of the year. More than anybody. She's 35 and she's already surpassed like Stevie Wonder and people like that as like the sole person to ever win 4 albums of the year. Once I saw Eras in its total, I was very impressed by the movie and the concert, because even if you're not a fan, I was like, I don't know, but there are still like 6 songs in there that I was feeling, you know, from her catalog. And it's a very big show. I think her fans appear very unstable from the clips. They're all crying. They all know every song. She's like, this is a B-side from my like unreleased album from 1487.
Yeah.
And she strums one thing and they're like, and they all know the lyrics. Like the whole crowd. I'm like, what the fuck? What cult is this? What cult is this?
Yeah. I mean, if we're doing the Taylor Swift episode here, I got you. But I do think it is. It's amazing to me because I was actually thinking about this today, because I think now her and Travis Kelce, like collectively and the cultural conscious, are kind of becoming annoying to people that are like even pro Kelce and Taylor Swift. I still don't really care personally,
but I'm going to get to my argument about why I think that is. Like, I'm going to make an excuse for her, but I don't like it.
Yeah.
The US Open was kind of a breaking point for me.
That's what people are saying.
Because
like him in the bucket hat and him, like they're just like,
it's this like, I'm always on, like, it's like the Truman Show at this point. It's like, you're always a character in the Taylor Swift movie.
Right.
And like I've always said, watching her perform, I was like, you know what? All the sultry looks and the dance moves and the swagger, perfect.
Yeah.
For a performer, dynamic, beautiful, great.
Yeah.
Incredible. I mean, 3.5 hours, the stamina, the choreography, what went into the show, that she was doing this show like several times a week for months. Incredible. I think, and this is my defense of her in a weird way, if I was like a criminal trial, like the annoying Taylor Swift, the people have charged you with first degree felony annoying. How do you plead? Not guilty.
Yeah.
And here's my backup. Like, it was this. I think you can't turn it off. She is at a level, just like Michael Jackson took the weird path of megastar.
Right.
He took the weird path. He didn't take the look at me all the time path. He took the, I'm fucked up.
Yeah.
I'm weird. I'm going to hang out with animals and be alone. And then I'll drop a cool album and I'll walk around sunglasses hidden. People will lose their shit every time I perform.
Yeah.
And then I will go away and do weird things and have,
and bad things. And
well, you know, I mean, do you know your ancient Greek history?
wow.
It's called mentorship, Mike.
Distance.
And then you have the Taylor Swift method, which is I am a superstar who does not turn, because it's watching her walk out onto that stage from some of those camera angles. I've said this at concerts with Laura. Like, I've done shows in front of 1,000 people and I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
Then there's the being in an arena watching like
70,000
guitarists just fucking rip a solo and it's 20,000 people in Prudential or Madison Square Garden. And you're like, oh my God, of course they do drugs and go nuts after, because the high, the body
down.
Was not built for this level. Like, my God.
Yeah.
Then you're Taylor Swift alone, by the way. Her band, she is the star. Like, everybody is backup. It's not like she's the front woman. She's it. And she's walking out on a stage and I'm intimidated just looking at the camera angle. I'm like, you're in the middle of SoFi Stadium. It's packed with people who worship you and you're murdering it.
Yeah.
It's like, I think she's taken the path of like, every time I'm out, I'm always on, because not because I'm on, but because it's like a coping. It's like, how do you turn off being on when your on is greater than almost everybody's on who's ever lived?
I think it's weird because I actually think she's being herself. I think there's enough of a sample size where I just think she is kind of like annoying and dorky. Frankly,
I think Kanye traumatized her. I think
maybe
because when she got that award, that was like, it was almost like she was like, fine. Now everywhere, I'm going to always be the center of attention. Like, it's like the in memoriam part of the Grammys doesn't require you to dance along, Taylor.
Yeah.
Take that one off.
Yeah. Yeah.
But she's like, oh, you're big into jazz cello, Taylor, and hip hop. And kids' music, and the comedy category, and the in memoriam where they're talking about people who died. Like, she's never, it's like during those awards, I find her the most annoying. On stage, incredible. I didn't even mind her when she was just cheering on Travis Kelce. I wasn't one of those, as we know, in an episode. I was like, who gives a shit? Like, it's fine. Yeah, she's a huge star. She's bigger than the NFL. It's working out for everybody, really, except haters. But the U.S. Open really was like a point where I was like, this is
enough.
Something has happened in this weird moment for me. But I like I said, I think watching that movie brought into real terms how huge she is.
But this is the thing, and this is where I get stuck with her. And it's gonna sound like I'm being a hater, and I'm not. I
shake it off, Taylor.
I just don't really understand it. I still don't. And I liked her music, you know, like we've talked about this or whatever, like those first, really before Antonoff got involved, I did like her music. I didn't think it was bad. I don't even think her music now is like bad, but I guess that's the thing. I don't think it's good either.
Right.
Like, is she a great singer?
Could she be music's female Tom Cruise? Where, like, you are bigger than the simple, how good is this song? That you are, like, a musical star that has just sort of reached this height where it no longer even really matters if you're just doing good or great music. Like, Tom Cruise goes in a movie and I'm getting what I want. I'm getting Tom Cruise. It doesn't mean Mission Impossible 7 is his best movie, because it's not.
Well, I think, you know, it's weird because I kind of always felt this way about David Bowie. I always liked Bowie. Mm-hmm. And I do think there's strokes of genius in a lot of his work. And there's a lot of his songs that I like and think are great songs.
Labyrinth soundtrack, I assume.
Not that. And that's what I'm talking about. There is this era of Bowie where it's just, I think people were just so willing to suck him off for any reason.
He had a big one, they say.
I think he did have a big one. Yeah.
Which is like, I haven't seen Labyrinth since I was a kid. So as a kid, I wasn't looking for his cod piece, but I've heard people say it's very distracting.
The lawyer that I dated, she was like obsessed with Labyrinth. She said that was like the thing that made her like become sexual as a kid, was like was David Bowie in Labyrinth. I swear to God.
You wanna be a lawyer?
But I just like
that's
I just
crazy. Can we have her as a guest on the show?
She doesn't talk to me anymore.
Will she talk to me?
I doubt it.
Okay. I am a lawyer.
Unless you're representing me for bothering her, I don't think you guys your paths will ever cross.
But you're the strangeness of what you just said. You're moving past too quickly. Labyrinth is when she became like.
I found it funny and strange, and yeah, it is. It's you know, it's a weird thing, but I just think that it's this situation where it's kind of like she's definitely the biggest artist of right now. She's probably the biggest artist of her generation. It's like her and Beyonce, I guess. But I kind of look at it and I'm just like, I don't think that she's the most talented or even really close to it. Like she's not as good of a singer as somebody like Adele or like even or Ariana Beyonce. Grande or Beyonce. Right. And you kind of just, she's not like a great musician. It's not like that woman, who's like a great guitar player.
But have you
seen
her crowd work during her specials?
No, she's obviously a star. Right. I mean, I get that aspect of it.
But they've gotten to grow up with her, and her career has been managed brilliantly.
But that's a weird thing to me that, like, the appeal is just that we've all, like, she represents us growing up together.
That's the appeal of Harry Potter. Those books aren't even that good. But the brilliance of J.K. Rowling.
But a book is so different than an individual art. Like it's like at some point, the bands that I like the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, they had to get to a place where their music transcended being like teeny pop stuff. Mm-hmm. And they made really incredible like works of music.
Well, Jack Antonoff is going to have her in like some ayahuasca lounge next to be like, we got to open you up.
But that's what I'm saying. It's just this weird thing where it's like when I watch The Song Remains the Same, which is basically the Led Zeppelin film from when they were concert film, they're at the Garden. It's mm-hmm. somewhere in the 70s. It's like them at their peak.
Okay.
And it's just it's unbelievable how good they are. You're just watching them. You're just like, I can't imagine anybody plays guitar better than Jimmy Page. John Paul Jones playing all these different instruments and he's just like killing it. And all four of them, you could argue at that moment in time, they were just like the best at what they did. Like best singer, best guitar player, best bass player, best drummer. The four of them just on the stage doing what, and you're watching it. It's like mesmerizing because you're just like, how could anybody ever do this?
That's what it's I unbelievable. Felt when I attended one of Diddy's Freak Fests.
Oh, good God.
Should I have not said that?
I just, the Diddy stuff is brutal, but do you get what I'm
freak
saying?
Off, I'm sorry. Freak off. Branding purposes, yeah. He always got mad when I called them Freak Fests. Yeah. It's a freak off.
And it seems like so does the FBI. They prefer Freak Off as well.
Yeah.
But do you get what I'm saying? Am I making sense?
No, you're absolutely making sense.
It's not that she's bad. I don't think she's bad. And it's not like me hating on Taylor Swift. It's just the lack of understanding of just like, I just don't really know. Because even Michael Jackson, who, you know, questionable legacy. But you're right. When he would emerge, it's
freak
like...
Freak Off Junior.
Freak Off Junior, you're right. When he would emerge with new music, you were kind of just like, whoa. This is fucking Thriller.
Can I tell you one of my jokes about Michael Jackson?
Sure.
I said, if you listen to his album titles, he was trying to warn you. Bad. I'm giving them in order. Thriller.
Yeah.
Bad. Dangerous. And was Blood on the Dance Floor after that. And then Invincible.
Right.
So once he gave you four titles where he was warning you to keep your kids away from,
he made it
like,
through.
I'm invincible. Yeah. Okay, I concede. You can't get me. weirdest thing on that album, which isn't bad, Invincible, is that song You Rock My World, the intro with Chris Tucker.
Yeah.
Where like Chris Tucker's like, man, you can't get that girl. He's like, I can get her. Nah, you can't get that girl, Mike. Watch me. And you're like, ew. I don't believe you, sir.
Yeah, that's gross.
It was actually the only thing worse than like Nathan Lane trying to be straight in The Birdcage.
Yeah.
Was Michael Jackson trying to be a player.
Yeah. It was so bizarre.
I can get it. Watch me. Boom, boom, boom. good song, but yeah, anyway. Well, I just wanted to start with that. We should probably take a break. I think we are just going to make this the Taylor Swift Shohei Ohtani episode. The collab you didn't realize you needed.
You came back from the road and you needed to decompress.
Right.
About sometimes.
But with Taylor Swift, I was impressed by the movie, and there is something about, like, I think she's very attractive, but it's weird. It's the same way you feel about her music, where I'm like, there's something not sexually hot about her.
Right. And I think she looks like attracted to her, but you're right. There
I
is kind of like
attractive.
Right.
I found her brother Mike. I find her attractive, but I'm not attracted to her. I think that's a weird distinction, but that's exactly how I feel.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, great legs, pretty, talented, confident. You just don't do it for me. Sorry. Like, yeah. It's a weird paradox.
I mean, okay, go ahead.
But yeah, no, I was just going to, but I think I was just trying to figure out, like, you know, is she's occupied this space now. And it's almost like, as a lead in to our Shohei Ohtani discussion, it's almost like Taylor Swift is that person who keeps winning MVP. And you're like, yeah, I know what the advanced stats say. She's the biggest star.
Right. Exactly.
But then I'm like, but Beyonce, not that I'm like a big devotee of like all of Beyonce's work, but I'm like, if you're looking at like Taylor Swift has 4 albums of the year, Beyonce has 0.
Right.
You look at that and you're like, and then I'm like, Billie Eilish has 1, Adele has 3. It starts to really play into the racial dynamic. It makes the racial dynamics a little too obvious.
Right.
You know, but it's going to be, I think I just want to see that year where it's like Billie Eilish has her goth album, Adele has her big songbird album, and Taylor Swift has broken up with Travis Kelce album, and see when they're all at their peak,
yeah,
who takes the crown?
Yeah.
Because we know one thing, it won't be Beyonce. And we'll be back with Shohei Ohtani after this break. And we're back. And I'm not even going to ask Mike how that break was, because it was a productive discussion we were having that we have to bring back right now before we go to Shohei Ohtani.
You know, once I get started on music, I can't stop. This is my wheelhouse.
Well, music and baseball.
Music and baseball.
Happy,
that's right.
Happy belated birthday, Mike. I would say, like you just told me, that the song, the pop song I like of hers from 2014, not a Jack Antonoff song.
Blank Space, yeah.
So it's sort of in a pure pop. It's clear. It's clear of the allegations.
It's like she's like taking, you know, when the cops put the knife in the heroin and like lick it up. She's doing that with Jack Antonoff.
She's
on
like
this album.
100% garbage.
Yes. Yeah. I need more. This is good shit.
This is pure. This is digital fentanyl.
Yes.
But the thing we were saying about Beyonce,
yeah,
where as somebody who wasn't as familiar with Taylor Swift's stuff, I like Renaissance, I've listened to since I sort of listened to it the first time. I was like, it's fine. But I get why it was more, it's not like necessarily my thing, but I've grown to appreciate it a little more than when I first listened to it. But Beyonce has done different things. She has her country, obviously the big country album that came out. And we were discussing in the break that I always thought maybe the Grammys are like, you know, tilted towards the singer-songwriter. Like that's their thing. Overproduced things or lots of producers involved. Well, that's, we are biased artistically to the singer-songwriter.
Yeah.
If we can. Well, now the Taylor Swift albums that are winning these awards, just to be fair, heavily, heavily produced stuff that doesn't really have necessarily a signature of Taylor Swift anymore.
Well, frankly, all music now. I mean, there was a time in 2014, I suppose, where you could look at certain styles of music and say, like, well, there's musicianship here. There is like blah, 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 blah. Now, Taylor Swift's music is just like Beyonce's, completely produced in. And if anything, Beyonce's taking bigger musical risks.
Right. She's switching with genres.
Right. And, she's doing attempting, even though the country album, I listened to some of it, it's not like a real, in my opinion, like traditional country album, but she is taking a risk of actually attempting to like have a guy that plays guitar in the studio with
her. And what I'd say about Beyonce's Country album to defend it, because I'm
not saying it's bad.
I liked it. But the thing that I found is when I've listened to modern country, I'm like, well,
you guys have been
piggybacking like 25% pop hip hop for the last two decades, it seems.
I retract my statement.
No. So it's like, it's more like she could even label her album country infused pop.
Right.
Like, but some reason it's like controversial and like bad because she made like a direct effort to embrace it and market it a certain way. But when you listen to some country, a lot of country, there's a lot of pop and like a little bit of hip hop seeping in, but but it's okay because they front it as I'm a white, for the most part, I'm a white country guy. So it's authentic.
Right.
No, it's no longer about, it's like so many things in this country involving white people. It's no longer really about what you're saying it is. Like we've discussed.
Yes.
It's Blue Lives Matter when they attack black people, but it's not Blue Lives Matter above all.
Right.
And it's the same thing with the music where it's like, when Beyonce does it, she's encroaching upon country. When country freely uses pop and hip hop to make their country music, well, it's still authentic because they identify.
She's wearing a
cowboy hat. Pronouns are hick dipshit. So they're allowed to identify as country. it's just more hypocrisy, really. But as far as the Grammys are concerned, you're right. That's the...
No, there's no excuse anymore.
There's no excuse anymore because
ten years
down, pumping out highly produced music.
10 years down the road now, there's no more he wears short skirts, I wear t-shirts, whatever. It's fucking Antonov sitting there with this drum machine and whatever he's doing. And it's the same shit. So, I mean, we're just at this place now with music where everything is the same shit. So, I mean, take your album of the year and stick it up your ass anyway, because it's all the same music.
Now we're doing my area of music, Limp Bizkit. Stick it up your ass. Stick it up your ass.
It's like who can work the drum machine best, which is kind of something that I hate, but Taylor Swift is no longer, even if she's writing her own songs, which I'm sure she still is, like the Antonov effect has taken away any sort of like musical credibility to me in her music. Not her fault. I mean, it's her, he's making her hits. Why would he not?
Right.
Why wouldn't she work with him still? But I mean, it's just brutal. There's no reason to keep Beyonce out anymore. There's no excuse.
Karma is a boyfriend. Karma is a vegan.
Yeah, I mean, just...
Anyway.
Hold my head underwater.
I don't mean to slander her too much, but I felt like I needed to offer...
It's not her, it's him.
No,
we're Antonov haters. Hey, we're not Taylor Swift haters.
I'm sorry. As the feminist on this show,
I'm
not removing her agency the way you are.
No, it's just...
She is not some... victim of talk of her in these patriarchal terms. She has her own, she has agency here.
I'm just telling
she's making choices.
I'm telling you, Taylor Swift and Coldplay are on the same train held hostage by their producers. Brian Eno ruined Coldplay. Coldplay was one of my favorite bands. And then Paradise comes out. I was like, oh no, it's over. That's it.
Para.
Awful.
Yeah.
Awful.
Yes.
So bad.
Okay. So the point is, I think that's when it really came into view for me, where I was like, okay, without knowing their music intimately, I was more familiar with Beyonce's music than Taylor Swift's music as far as albums. But a 4-0 record at this point is there, like you said, there is no excuse at this point for a 4-0. Like,
yes.
Because
agreed.
Now it's just either autopilot or racism.
Yes.
Either one is not good. One is too lazy. One is wrong.
Yeah.
Anyway, guys, while we're talking about legends and old fashioned versus new wave, you're a baseball guy, Mike, right?
Big time.
Okay. Our listeners aren't, but this is going to be tough titties for them this week because I woke up from my baseball coma.
Yeah.
This week. Like Steven Seagal in Hard to Kill. About 7 years out. My last memory was banging my wife before some guys shotgunned her to death. And I woke up all of a sudden and Kelly LeBrock is shoving me going, Shohei Ohtani, wake up, wake up. And I go, hey, what? Hey, huh, hey, That's my Steven Seagal impression.
Don't touch me. I know karate.
It's his Aikido really is like 90% Three Stooges routine.
I know. He was a movie star.
He's one of the, like, that's, I will say this. The diminishment of the mid-level yes. action star is probably a good thing we don't talk about.
You think? I kind of hate.
No, don't give me fun. That's what, of yeah, course. Yeah, yeah. But like when I watch Jason Statham in The Beekeeper, I'm not like there's no joy in that movie. It's yeah. like excessively violent, pretty dumb.
Yeah.
So I'm not like, whereas. But the Seagals, the Van Dams of the world, as important as they were to my teens.
Yeah.
Maybe those guys don't deserve to be huge successes.
I mean, I think Van Damme is actually an okay actor.
Oh, he was my favorite.
Yeah, yeah.
He was my favorite.
But like, Seagal is not. Seagal, but it's just like so funny that they were just like, I don't know where they found him, but they were just like, this guy knows karate. I just can't believe it.
His movie, you know, like the funny thing is that would make for a funny movie today. Like a guy like Seagal, like an 80s action guy trying to compete with like the CrossFit athletes doing action movies today.
Didn't they kind of do that with Van Damme? Or no, I guess the Van Damme thing they did was like a fantasy about him.
Like he's older, JCVD.
Yeah, they did some show with him.
There was a show on Amazon, and then there was also like a mockumentary sort yeah. of thing called JCVD. So he was able to sort of point,
yes,
like make fun of himself. But I mean, literally a movie with like Danny McBride yeah. and Chris Hemsworth.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like start like going out for an action movie.
Yeah.
And the movie is about like the 80s guy is Danny McBride, who's yeah. a little ass shape. He's like, come on, man. I know karate. Like yeah. I'm a martial artist. And Hemsworth is like, you know, just doing backflips and yeah. like, you know, whatever. Anyway, don't know why I got into that, but oh, baseball, Hard to Kill. I went on an entire yeah. Sega. Anyway, I woke up because Aaron Judge kind of nudged me awake, but he's already done great things.
Yes.
But the 6'7", you know, the 6'7" biracial community obviously is very excited about Aaron Judge
yeah.
as we have been the whole time. But when I saw Shohei Ohtani go 6-for-6 with 3 home runs, 2 stolen bases, 4 runs, miss the cycle by a triple, thrown out at third. And people were calling it maybe the greatest individual game in baseball history. And he joined the 50-50 club. I just wrote, and by this is not me being a homer or recency bias. This is me being like, hey, I'm going to give extra credit to the guy who just made me interested in baseball again.
Sure.
Even if temporarily. And I was just like, greatest player we've ever seen. This is unbelievable. First 50-50. And then I joked, but please give Angel Reese her credit as well.
Right. Which is a joke that I didn't get.
You didn't get, yes. Nor did several people.
That was the punchdown of the week.
A lot of people did get it. And which is why I found it funny that somebody was like, well, explain your terrible joke. And I'm like, no, no, not getting a joke. This has been my fight with comedy the last 8 years. When you don't know something, maybe it's you. Because mm-hmm. I'm not Dennis Miller talking about Soren Kierkegaard and comparing that to like the War of 1812 and 9/11 in my bit. I'm not that obscure, but we've become less and less about having general knowledge. We use Google to know things now. And, but I said, no, no, because everybody kept saying Caitlin Clark owed some of her rise to Angel Reese. So I was elevating it even more to the absurd, saying, you know, Shohei Ohtani, good job, but don't forget to thank Angel Reese for some of the exposure you got.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people did get that. You did not. But at least you were nice about it.
Yes.
As opposed to the people who always assume that when they don't get a joke, it's the comedian's fault.
Many people are saying they got that joke.
A lot of people. Many experts. We talked to very well-respected experts who said, that's a good joke. But I wanted to discuss Shohei Ohtani. Oh, and everybody's left. Well, that's fine. I think baseball has a chance to resurrect itself.
Boy.
No, I know. And I'm the skeptic. If you remember our very low watched, listened to episode on baseball, I'm the baseball skeptic. But I am seeing baseball at a crossroads right now where you forever fall into the path of the NHL, who have given up on being a mainstream sport.
Yeah.
Which is an abomination. Great sport, great athletes, loyal fan base, great to watch in person, exciting. It's perfectly paced for today's America.
They respect the cops.
They love the firefighters. Yeah. It's just, you know, it's just cops, firefighters, and America.
Uh-huh.
And so the NHL, Gary Bettman, I think he does a lot of good work with ALS. That aside, horrible piece of shit what he's done to the NHL and allowing it to go from a mainstream sport to a niche sport.
Yeah.
It's embarrassing. I mean, in every way, the video games are not as mainstream anymore. They're good, but they're not. They should be the NBA 2K, the Madden, the NHL. It used to be like that.
Yeah.
The stars of the NHL, not highlighted, not in commercials, not like everything about that sport. Okay. Baseball is not there yet. But baseball is starting to really cater, it feels, culturally, to the war people, to the win above replacement people, to the advanced metrics. Like, it's almost like, oh, I like baseball because it's making me feel like I'm part of an exclusive club.
Mm-hmm.
It's take me out to the ball game, not put me in a gaming chair alone while I analyze the stats. Let me sit by myself and look at pictures of women, cause I don't have friends. I just like stats. I am lonely and never go back. And like whatever the song would be. Yeah. You get what I'm saying, though, where it's like, it's kind of cool when you're like, oh, like, you don't want to go from main. It's sometimes bad when you're hip or you're cool and you go mainstream.
Yeah.
Oh, you sold out. Well, guess what, baseball? You were mainstream. You've been mainstream for 140 years. You don't. The worst thing, even worse than selling out, is going, we want to be indie.
Yeah.
We want to be low key.
They started working with Jack Antonoff. And that was it.
Oh, God. Can you do my your modern Taylor Swift impression?
All I do is this. Now I'm singing this.
I do like how all you're I touching your this. Soundboard like instinctively. You're like,
I had to get the camera on me. But yeah.
Yeah, baseball commissioner Jack Antonoff. It's become like, it's like the fans somehow are like, well, we're not as popular anymore. We're no longer America's pastime. That's football. Right? It's 100%. Not even a question. But instead of saying, but can we hold on to number two? Can we still be big and popular? They're like, no.
Yeah, no.
What if we become a niche sport and we focus on the advanced stats?
Bro, can I tell you, so I'm going out with this woman after our recording tonight.
Wow.
Who's from Portugal.
You better unbutton one more button.
She, we're hanging out tonight and we were just texting and talking, leading up to this date. And obviously in Europe, the only thing they care about is soccer.
Football. Just a little help before the date. Football.
So I was telling her like, yeah, I'm not really into football, but I'm into like, I'm a big baseball fan, whatever. And she's like, I don't even really think I don't think I know anything about the game.
Do you want me to just call the date for you? Do you want to just like...
What do you mean?
Just cancel the date now? Cultural barrier?
She was saying, she's like, we should go to a game and we should like you can teach me about the game because I don't understand. She's like, I know there's four bases. She didn't know what a pitcher was. She didn't know.
Hungry eyes from Dirty Dancing and you're like helping her with her swing
kind
and
of,
stuff.
Yeah, in some way. So I was trying to go over all of the stuff like just to get her started. And I was like, dude, they're like... They're in trouble because I'm trying to explain this to somebody that literally doesn't have any idea,
right?
Like what baseball is. I just growing up in America, you just assume that everybody's like got some understanding of it. There's a person that doesn't know at all. And I'm like, she's like, well, why do they miss the ball so much when they swing at it? And I'm like trying to explain to her. I'm like, well, you know, it's like if you're a 300 hitter, you're a Hall of Famer, and I'm realizing as I'm saying all this stuff, I was like, I am never going to get this grown woman to have any interest in this at all. And then when you start breaking down the basics of like, so if you were to tell her the stats that mattered for 100 years, like, yeah, the three big stats, batting average, home runs, and runs batted in.
Mike, the man hit a home run.
Right.
No, babe, his WAR sucks.
That's the thing, right? So now you get into this position where you're like, well, now people care about like OPS and OPS plus. And it's like, well, what's that? Then you have to explain slugging percentage. Then you have to explain on base percentage. Like, you start getting to this place, and you're right. Now when you go to Citi Field, like I'll go with my dad or whatever, a Mets game, OPS is the first stat on the scoreboard. They don't even show batting average anymore.
Billy Bean, really did change the game.
So, like, do me a favor, JL. Yeah. Explain OPS.
Okay.
Can you?
OPS is on-base percentage plus slugging percentage.
Right, but how do they get that?
Now, on-base percentage is basically when you get on base other than, like, an error. Like, you walk, you get a hit, etc. And slugging percentage, I've never actually understood how they calculate slugging percentage.
So slugging is doubles, triples, and home runs.
It indicates the power of your hits, so to speak. The quality of your hits. Like, a double is worth more than a single. A triple is worth more than a double. A home run is the maximum to your slugging percentage. I assume if you went 4-for-4 with 4 home runs, your slugging percentage is 1,000 and your...
I don't even really know. I know
this percentage is 1,000, so your OPS. But this, all right. So this is 2,000.
JL, this is exactly the point. This is two people that have grown up watching baseball who are just like, I think OPS is when they do this, and then you get a certain amount of like points on the decimal for. So I'm literally sitting there trying to explain the basics to somebody that has no frame of reference for baseball, and I'm sitting there. I'm just like, there's no way to do this anymore.
Well, you know
there's
what they no always, way.
How do you calculate war? How do you explain to somebody the metric of
was
war?
Was it in Bull Durham where they said chicks dig the war? that's part of the problem is that, like, for instance, a woman, you're dating a woman who loves football.
Well, we're going out.
Right. You know what I'm just saying. I'm advancing this relationship.
Yeah. Don't put a ring on my finger yet, JL.
No. I mean, everybody knows who's listening to this podcast. All you want to be is a single wild stallion out there. but what I'm saying is if you guys went out a month from now, I'd be like, you have playoff tickets to the Yankees, Rangers tickets, regular season game, Knicks tickets, regular season game, or even an NFL regular season game with a good team. I'd be like, baseball, even though it's playoffs, baseball should be your last choice because hockey, great pacing. Like baseball is like a
playoff
puzzle.
Game at Yankee Stadium.
No, you wouldn't because you'd be like, I want to go.
Well,
but
sure.
I'm saying if your priority is the date,
but
baseball would be last.
But
you can talk more. You'd be like, it's slower, so it's more like.
But I will say for a playoff game for baseball,
Shohei Ohtani, everybody.
The tension is higher.
But not if you don't understand the game, it's probably more
I don't agree. I think that if you're there, not if you're watching, but if you're there.
It's intense. Like, I'm being kidnapped by a Mexican cartel. I don't speak Spanish, but
she's Portuguese.
I know there's a lot of tension right now. It's like that. I don't know what's going on. I just know it's tense.
I guess. But if she doesn't know the other sports either, then what difference does it make?
Because I feel like basketball and hockey... To a soccer fan, at least
hockey would make sense.
Goals and offsides in hockey, it's a little different, but it's and basketball. That's why basketball and hockey, baseball's never other than Cuba, other than like countries kind of in our shadow in the Western Hemisphere.
Yes,
has not caught on.
That's not completely true. I mean, Japan has caught on in
good
to bring us back.
To Shohei Ohtani.
I mean, listen, the best baseball player in the world is Japanese.
Here's the countries. The countries that learn baseball are places that wanted to kiss our ass or wanted to destroy us.
It's kind of true. Yeah.
It's like, let's beat them at their own game or let's be like them.
Yeah.
Everybody else is like, bullshit.
Yeah, yeah.
Weird sport.
Yeah.
But yes. The best player in baseball is a man named Shohei Ohtani. And when I praised him, maybe too effusively, it brought out the slow down, bro. Like, and the people, first off, I'd like to dismiss the Barry Bonds people right away.
Okay. That's your opinion.
Yeah.
I wouldn't, but.
No, I'm dismissing him.
Okay.
Because the truth is people have the very weird recency bias where they're just like, they have forgotten that Barry Bonds, in my opinion, if he had never taken steroids, would be viewed as, at best, the second best player of his generation. And that I believe, without question, Ken Griffey Jr. would be considered the best player of that era. 600 home runs clean, 10 gold gloves clean, and a career arc that mirrored a normal health of a career. Barry Bonds, people love to act like he was this. Barry Bonds became a monster after, like, people will point to all these seasons he had, and I'm like, right, he was on the juice, and he was in his late fucking 30s. Like, it's not just like, Do you get what I'm saying? Like, this is not to say he's not a Hall of Famer. Of course he's a Hall of Famer. He was a Hall of Famer pre-roids. But he was angry, understandably, at the Maguire-Sosa attention. And he then became... He went from Barry Bonds, is he the best player of his generation, to Barry Bonds. Can Ted Williams and Babe Ruth suck his dick and eat his ass at the same time?
Well, but when do we think he went on the juice?
Well, anytime after 98.
I mean, even no, but I don't know, man. Even before,
and he was playing in like a very friendly. Okay, I mean,
I don't know. I don't know that. I don't know that it's as much of a slam dunk.
Oh, because you're not looking, because all the stats people cite are not just the home runs. They'll be like, he had more intentional walks. Yes, because he was
he hit 46 home runs in 93, 123 RBIs. He's not on steroids yet.
No, I know. Right, in 93.
Yeah.
And then when did he hit 73?
In 2000.
Right.
But I'm saying
how old was he in 93 and how old was he in 2000?
I don't know. I'm looking at his reference page, so I'm just looking at the stats. But I mean, in 2000, he was 35. Yeah. And he hit 73 when he was 36.
Okay. Right. Because that's when everybody gets really good at their sport. Is 36. But
he was good. That's what I'm saying, dude.
No,
he,
but the stats.
He was hitting 40 home runs before that. He was hitting 40 home runs before.
But that's not when he became better than Babe Ruth and Ted Williams to people. That's not when he became GOAT, greatest player I've ever seen, period. It was after his Giants roid capade that he became the undeniable GOAT. Oh, there are other people who put up stats better than his pre-steroids. Griffey is my example. I'm not saying Barry Bonds is not an all-time great and a Hall of Famer. I am saying there is a big difference between you're a Hall of Famer and you are the undisputed greatest player of all time. And that is what steroids took him to.
Sure. I mean, he had three MVPs before he even left Pittsburgh.
I know. Hall of Famer. Absolutely.
All right. I know. We're getting inside here for...
No.
Are we assuming we've just lost whoever we're going to lose by now?
So let's just do it. That's my point, is like he had three MVPs and that's why he was a first ballot Hall of Famer. He was viewed as an all around five tool talent. And here's my question for you. If Albert Pujols was not on steroids as a 700 home run hitter.
Was he on steroids?
No, nobody ever found out, but I think it's everybody is justified to be suspicious of anybody who thrived, you know, between 1998 and 2010.
Yeah.
I think skepticism is completely warranted from anybody who puts up huge numbers.
But also I think that the issue is that are we just talking about anabolic steroids specifically?
The cream.
Cause I think that at a certain point, the fitness regimes do change in the mid to late 90s. Regardless, I know that Maguire and like a lot of these guys did do anabolic.
Was like bodybuilding at that point. Like for a phase, right. It was like bodybuilding. It wasn't just training.
But it was never like that before then.
Right.
You know, ever.
Brady Anderson.
The 50 home runs.
The GNC coal mine.
Luis Gonzalez. Like there's a bunch of those guys. Yeah, Brian Roberts.
I loved his arms when they went into it. Somebody wrote a post on Facebook. They're like, it was meant to be funny, but he didn't make a joke. He was just like, in 2001, we actually had a clean champion. And it was like these Gonzalez like this. And just veins everywhere in his arms.
Out of his mind, Rick.
I mean, you had Brett Boone hit like 40 at second base.
Second base, yeah.
And but my point is, the holy, and that's the thing. I don't even take it away from Bonds that he was a top two, three player in the league pre-roids. And he took roids to prove, hey, if I'm on the same scale as you, I'm number one again.
Yes.
I get that. I get the impulse and I get why you'd put him in the Hall of Fame. So I'm not arguing that. I don't like it when he is used context-free as the clear greatest because look what he did. I will always look at Ken Griffey Jr. and go, no evidence of roids. His career had a fully natural arc to it. He peaked at 30, 31, and had a steady decline. And I go, 600 home runs, 10 gold gloves, a phenom at 18. That's, to me, the greatest player of that era because there's nothing tying him to anything nefarious. And he was an all-around five-tool player. That's my opinion. And if A-Rod had not been juiced, unfortunately, I thought he was the best. I thought he was just...
Yeah.
And at such a young age. I mean, at 20, he was a 40-40 guy. Incredible.
Yeah, he was unbelievable.
So the point is, the reason Bonds comes up and the reason all these other things come up is that when I declared Shohei Ohtani the best player ever, it wasn't necessarily just a statistical thing. It was, I don't think we've... He is... It depends on your criteria, but if your criteria is... Who's literally the best at baseball? If you factor in everything you can do on a baseball field, and his big ace is, oh, I'm also like a Cy Young caliber pitcher.
Yeah. I mean, this is the thing, man. It's hard because he's been hurt as a pitcher. He is a very good pitcher when he is, you know, not nursing his elbow. The problem is, in a year where he doesn't play the field at all, there was an argument made for Francisco Lindor, who's the Mets shortstop, switch hitting shortstop, who should probably also
just put a
win.
Disclaimer on the screen that you're a Mets fan when you start going into this during the editing.
You're like hyperventilating that I brought it up. But there's the argument that can be made because he's a gold glove caliber shortstop and he plays both ways. And Ohtani as a DH, you know, you're probably going to be a little more likely to have fresh legs if you're not doing anything but hitting.
But my flip.
So we don't have.
But when we started discussing this, I then said, right. And his hitting stats weren't as good when he was like a rotation pitcher, but he was still an MVP doing both.
I know.
Like,
I get it.
So it's to me, it's, and what I would argue there is, like I said before off mic, the way a catcher gets a boost because of the rigors of that position. So like a catcher, like Piazza, you know, probably juiced as well, but amazing.
Didn't juice.
Sauce. He was on the sauce.
He didn't juice. They thought there is no evidence of him juicing other than having pimples.
And to me, best right-handed swing in baseball.
The best left-handed power swing for sure.
The left-handed swing is such a like nice, for whatever reason, the Griffey swing the Griffey is so... Swing. Yeah, yeah. But Piazza's two... Like, what a great swing. I loved like and I think just best right-handed. Awesome. I don't know any right-handed hitter who I've ever seen that I liked his swing more, and always two hands.
Well, the other one I would say is A-Rod.
Sure, but A-Rod had more of a like
one-handed. I'm a superstar. Boom.
I'm posing for the Donruss upper deck picture with this swing.
Yeah, yeah.
There was something a little cosmetic about it, but Piazza's. I loved it anyway. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding about that. But Piazza. Doing what he did, even if people considered him a below average catcher.
Yes.
Just squatting for 130 games and then hitting 40 home runs is insane. Yep. And he hit for average too.
Yeah.
So I'm saying just like that is more impressive. I think what Ohtani does, it's more like Ohtani. I compared him to Wilt Chamberlain before the episode because it was like Wilt Chamberlain was not the best passer in the NBA.
Yeah.
But one season he said he wanted to lead the league in assists and he did.
Yeah.
And when you have that kind of skill set where you can, it doesn't mean he could average a triple double for a season or he could do all the things he could do, but he could do all the things. And there's very few people who can say that. And I think Shohei Ohtani has shown, I mean, a 50-50 season at any in yeah, any capacity yeah. is crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know he had that kind of speed. 50 stolen bases and as a big dude.
I mean, they did widen the bases, but yes.
Oh.
Listen, I think he's great. I think he deserves the MVP. He's going to win it. You know, I'm not down. The only thing that I will say about Ohtani is I'm down on him a little bit as an ambassador to the game because he is very buttoned up.
Somebody saw Oppenheimer a few too many times.
No, it's just I like that the whole when he was being courted by all these teams, there were all these they weren't even rumors. I guess the reports that came out that he wouldn't. It basically if you mentioned to the press that you were talking to him, he would like take you out of contention.
Whoa.
He didn't even want people knowing who he was talking to, which is bad. Like that should be a good thing for baseball to have your best player in this free agent frenzy. Like that's what basically has built the NBA over the last decade.
But that's when Rob Manfred has to say, or Dorothy Mantooth, the commissioner, Rob Manfred.
What
is that his name?
Rob Manfred, yeah, yeah.
I was just making a Dorothy Mantooth joke from Anchorman. Anyway.
That's my only beef. I just wish he was a little more...
But I think that's a commissioner's job to sort of be like, can we have a meeting with you just before? Like, we want to... What can we do to make you comfortable? Because we need to promote you because you're great for the game. I can't... But if he is a private person, that's his right. But then you have to have a league that understands. And this is where the Gary Bettman thing comes in, where it's like... Well, do you have somebody of a historic nature? You got to find a way to convince him and his agent
that's what built baseball in the first place, was that your big superstar is this mythic figure.
Yeah.
Babe Ruth, who fucking the press loves, everybody loves him. He's eating hot dogs. He's playing with kids. He's, you know.
Whoa. Is not this breaking
that
bad. News?
No. I just mean
freak
that, like,
off with Babe Ruth.
No. Okay, I just mean that the Babe was very affable, and when your big superstar is very affable, I think it helps grow your game.
Like Barry Bonds. And that was what McGuire and Sosa. If baseball could do it all again, they'd be like, we'd give them more roids because it was awesome. McGuire and Sosa were happy ambassadors.
Yes.
And Barry Bonds was a surly ambassador not an ambassador.
Yeah.
But I think Shohei Ohtani, it was just bothering me because I think baseball is in danger of going in the hockey direction. They'll never be as small, but you're squandering your talent and then when I get beef from grief on online from people going his WAR isn't even this he's this somebody said to me Barry Bonds Shohei Ohtani's OPS is this, which would be like eighth in Barry Bonds's career. Ohtani's a nice guy. And I was like 50-50.
It's very dismissive.
No, and that's what I'm saying. And the Bonds people really are like, they have like the numbers and it's just like, don't look behind any of the numbers. We've won the argument because baseball is a numbers game.
Yeah.
We've won. And I'm like, how many games did Barry Bonds pitch? How many 50-50 seasons did he have? How many times was he... You know, and then I said to somebody, they were like, he's having a nice season. And I was like, well, it's going to be his third MVP. So I think he's had more than a nice season. So there's this desire to dismiss everybody who's new, just like the Jordan fans will never accept, I think, anybody being better than Jordan. There's no world. I mean, Wembanyama could win 7 straight MVPs and they'll be like, but he did lose also in the finals. And Jordan didn't.
Right.
So Ohtani, you got a fan. I was a fan, but I've been informed not to be anymore because your advanced metrics aren't as good as the fun. And like my analogy to this is when you go play Little League, do any of the kids brag about their WAR?
No.
Or even their OPS? Or are they just like,
not when I was a kid,
Tommy hit 2 home runs and Jimmy struck out 7 people. And that's baseball to me.
Yeah.
Like, That's baseball. I'm not saying as a general, we don't all have to be general managers.
Yeah.
I get why somebody who runs a $1 billion corporation wants to get into the data and really, but at the end of the day, when Shohei Ohtani strikes out 10 people on the mound and then hits 2 home runs, I go, that guy's really good.
Yeah.
I don't go, well, let's take a deeper dive, Mike, because I'm not convinced from what I've just seen.
Yeah.
Did strike out with runners in scoring position as well. So not sure he's our guy. Anyway, I know my great listeners, we did no politics. I need a break.
This one's for us.
I'm in a goddamn off-Broadway show as Trump. I'm a little Trumped out right now. So pardon me for taking a little bit of a break. If you bothered to listen to this, I think it was a good episode.
Yeah, very, I agree.
Very pop culture-y, very for the people.
Yeah.
You know, so we'll take one more break and we'll do some quick comedy talk. Right, Mike?
Yes.
Yay.
Yay.
See you after the break. And we're back. Mike, how was that break?
Good.
Good. Good to hear. We're going to get you out of here real soon to your Portuguese
princess.
Portuguese princess. Nice. Hopefully she's not a Lisbonian.
Why would that be bad? Oh, as a lesbian. on the punch sound of the week again.
No, that was terrible. That was a bad one, but I thought you'd get it and roll your eyes. I was going for like a cringe joke.
I thought you actually met a person from Lisbon. I was like, why is that bad?
Okay. So punch down of the week, it's Shohei Ohtani related.
Yeah.
This is why he's on my mind. I wrote Shohei Ohtani. It's the same joke you didn't get on Threads. Shohei Ohtani is the greatest baseball player ever, but give Angel Reese her credit as well. And this guy on Threads who doesn't follow me, so I'll name him. George Nichols, you're comparing a generational talent like Shohei to a woman who can only rebound against smaller players. Head slap emoji. I mean, sometimes I just want people to be like, wait, this is so weird. Maybe I'm not getting it. I'm okay with you not getting a joke, but it's when you, why would I be comparing, like, I'm comparing a guy who just had a 50-50 season to a rebounding rookie in the WNBA. Like, that should just be like, I don't get it. I should sit this one out.
Sure.
So, and as far as a special, folks, I watched OK Mister by Dion Cole, with Dion Cole, starring Dion Cole. What do you say, like, for a comedy special? Like, what would you say? By?
Yeah, I guess so. By Dion Cole.
By Dion Cole, who he was obviously a great supporting actor on Blackish for many years. He's had a couple Netflix specials, but this was the first one I've watched. And it was one of these specials where I was just like, I see a lot of these where I'm just like, oh, he's charismatic enough that I kept watching and I laughed at some parts. There wasn't really anything, fortunately, that I sort of like, that would label hack. I feel like that's still kind of my least favorite thing in comedy, is when I say, oh God, he went there, or he did that old trope or that. But it's not, it's better than okay. But there's like, it felt more, you know, some of these specials sometimes feel like, hey, you got a special in your contract.
Right.
You're a funny guy.
Right.
Give us 55 minutes of jokes. And I don't know, to be fair, if he's a joke guy, because it really is kind of like short bits. It's not like here. And I welcome this is not a long arcing story of my journey. And it's also not like random joke, because that gets exhausting.
Right.
I don't know. It was fine. I'm looking for my next special. I feel like I've been seeing a lot of things that I think are like, yeah, that was fine. That was a nice way to spend an hour. But like, you know, I am not the tough laugh that a lot of comedians are. Like when something's great, I love it. And I feel like I haven't seen anything great in a while, but he's better than okay. I'd say it's solid. So if you liked him on Blackish, or if you've seen his other specials, you can inform me how this one stacks up to his earlier ones. But it was like, I sat there and I was like, God, this is a good time now. I didn't feel like I wasted my time, which sometimes is the best you can do. So that's it, everybody. I promise to be back next week with, you know, some hot take with a good title that's hot from the news. Like, you know,
we're due for a school shooting. It's been 3 weeks.
Yeah, our guns episode, though, was so good. People should go back and listen to that. And for any new listeners or people who haven't seen, if I were to give you one episode that I'm very proud of that was early on in the show that I feel like didn't get as much as I'd like, old people. It's a joke. I called it old people, but it was on elder care and stuff. That's so it goes back like 30, 35 episodes or something. But just if you have the time, if this wasn't your speed, if you prefer it when I talk issues and politics and culture, like in that way, society, go check that one out. But I hope some of you like this. And obviously we're going to get the good engagement in the comments. That's the hardcores are, you know, holding it down.
Our raindrops, our true believers.
Our raindrops. Thank you. The raindrops. We appreciate you. Obviously, you want me to do the, you save your voice for your day?
Do you want to give it a shot?
Because you might be yelling because she doesn't understand you.
Right. That's what you do to people that don't speak your language.
Yeah. You yell at them. life hack, talk slower.
Yeah.
That's actually what you should do. But our instinct is to go, you go over there. Whereas what you should say is, you go over there. And like, because even when I was taking French, it was the speed of native speakers that threw me off, not the words themselves.
Yeah.
I caught je at the beginning. After that, nothing. So we are, as Mike would say, thank you for your comments. Be sure to engage on YouTube. But we are also, if you're a YouTube person, we're also an audio product.
That's right.
So check us out on your preferred podcast platform. Take us with you if you're going in the car on the road. You can listen to it if sitting down for an hour at your phone or computer is not viable. And on the flip side, if you're an audio listener, we hope you've already left a nice review on Apple and or Spotify. And if you haven't, please do that. But if you're an audio listener, go check out the video. There's a lot. There's things to see in the video that don't come across on audio. You know, like when I'm doing this for like 3 minutes during the opening of the show, you won't get the joke if you don't watch it. So we appreciate the support, comments, reviews, all that good stuff. Check out my calendar at jlcomedy.com. Buy an album, stream an album, watch the special, blah, blah, blah. See you at a live show. And I will see you all next Thursday. That doesn't work, Mike. See you all next Thursday. I will see you next Thursday.